everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, I can't figure out these traders on Wall Street. For months now, we have been hearing they need to cut interest rates. So they do a supersize today. Big cut, half percentage point. Market went up initially 400 points. Now it's like in the red. How do you figure that?
I don't know. I don't really know what's going on, but some of the pundits are saying this is too soon because inflation is really not under control yet.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
So I'm led to kind of think that if it had been the anticipated 0.25% cut, the markets wouldn't be responding in this manner. But who the heck knows? One thing I know the date. It's Wednesday, September the 18th, 2024. It's the Buckmaster Show, and we are, we'll launch year 15 in January already of our radio program after the 22 years I put in over at Channel 6 PBS. We're coming to you from the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station, one of five now under one roof. And the stations are doing well, all part of the Bustos Media, under the Bustos Media banner. This one's 1030, KVOI, The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening on my website. You can listen to the program live at buckmastershow.com. Of course, we take the live feed from the 24/7 feed from KVOI.com. When we do our telephone interviews, and we're going to be utilizing the live line quite a bit today. The live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. That number is 790-2040. Let's get the ball rolling with our contributor on health. He's one of two dozen regular contributors to the Buckmaster Show, and we've got the right guy when it comes to health because Will Humble is the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association, and he's really been in the business, the public health business now, pushing, will be close to four decades coming up here in a few years. Will has an incredible resume, and he was the agency director of the Arizona Department of Health from 2009 to 2015, and we're just delighted that he's part of the our program here. Will, how are you? Are you jet-lagged after the trip from Barcelona?
Well, yeah, actually, I still am. Although, I think it's a lot easier coming west than east.
It is.
You know, it's a lot worse going east. Coming west, you know, it's like daytime the whole time. So, yes, we did a 300-kilometer walk in northern Spain. It's called the Camino Santiago. My wife and I did that.
Wow.
We just got back last night. So it was you walk through some Spanish villages, and, you know, at the end you get this enormous cathedral in a place called Santiago de Compostela. But it's just a really nice, if you like, that's the kind of vacation I like, you know, where I'm moving around and doing a lot and seeing the countryside and meeting people and stuff.
Is this the famous Camino Real?
It's called Camino de Santiago.
Oh.
So Camino Santiago. So there's different ones. We did one in 2018 through Portugal.
Uh-huh.
So there's different paths, you know, all the way. For a lot of people, it's a religious pilgrimage. And so it's something people have been doing, I think, since the year 800 or something.
Wow. Yeah. I've heard a lot about it. A lot of people have done it, have great time doing it. Just to clarify, how many miles did you walk?
So everything's over there in kilometers. It was about 300 kilometers, so it's probably about 190 miles.
What?
In 12 days. About 225 kilometers a day, about something like that.
Wow. You must be in terrific shape. Did you work out before this trip to get in condition? My goodness.
Well, it's just walking. It's really not all that strenuous in terms of physical endurance. It's all about your feet.
Yeah. Wow.
As anyone who's done the Camino will tell you, you know, it's all about making sure you have the right kind of shoes, that you've got them broken in, that you got the right inserts. And then if you start getting blisters, you take care of them right away.
Yeah. Hey, I hope you had the new COVID vaccine before the trip.
Yeah, I got it like 4 days before.
Yeah.
I got it on a Wednesday. And we left on, I got it the day it came out in pharmacies. And that was a Wednesday. And we left on Saturday. But I'll tell your listeners, it did knock me like it. I didn't feel well the next day.
Me too.
So, but it's worth it. I'm glad I got it out of the way because I was assured that then I wasn't going to, you know, get the actual infection while I'm on the route.
Yeah, because I've heard from friends who have not had it and they've been traveling and they come back from flying and they get the COVID. So this is still very much out there. And I do want to say that I got mine 2 weeks ago Saturday, pretty much right when it had come out. I have a reaction every time to the shot, but this was the worst reaction. I really was in bed for almost 24 hours with this thing.
Yeah, me too. I was too.
I don't. This is a reformulated shot, correct? This is a totally new vaccine.
Well, it's updated for the most recent variants. So it's the Omicron series variants, but it's updated to the KP series, so the ones that have been circulating most recently. So it's similar to the previous booster shots, but they're trying to keep up with the new variants as they come along. So it's the most up to date.
And I had the new flu vaccine. They formulate that, of course, every year. And for folks over 55, they give you kind of a turbocharged vaccine. I had that on Saturday and had a little bit of reaction even to that. And I rarely ever have a flu reaction. But I just can't imagine these people who decide, I'm going to take the COVID and the flu shot at the same time. I am so glad I did not do that.
Yeah, no, I didn't either. Although last year I did do that. This year, I'm going to wait probably another month before I get my influenza shot.
All right. And we still, before we move on from COVID, which we've been talking about, you and I, for more than four and a half years now, it is still circulating, certainly over in California. They're still at the high level. I think we're down a little bit now to kind of the median level for COVID in Arizona. Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah. We had the increase in emergency department visits and inpatient hospitalizations happened in late July and early August in Arizona. So we're on the downslope now, but towards the holidays, it'll be back up circulating again. As we've talked about, it's on a 6-month cycle. It's pretty predictable these days that you've got these 6-month cycles of the virus, summer and then winter.
There is so much for the voter to take in when it comes to the 13 different measures and propositions on the ballot. One that you wrote about in your blog is Proposition 315. You put up a red flag on this one.
Yeah, it's a bit wonky for most Arizonans because but for somebody like me who's been in state government my whole career, I feel like it's really an important one. So I'll try to tie it up in a nutshell for folks. So when these state agencies that regulate, like Department of Environmental Quality, the State Health Department, et cetera, put their regulations together, there's the statute, the state legislature provides these agencies with their authority to regulate something. So I'll use nursing homes as an example. So legislature says to the agency, make regulations to make sure that people in nursing homes are getting the right kind of care, that they're kept safe and healthy. Then the agency puts together the regulations that what that means, like how do you prevent pressure ulcers? How do you prevent medication errors? How do you make sure people are getting the right food? How do you make sure people are staying hydrated? All of the nuts and bolts of how, you know, keeping people healthy and safe in an environment like that. And so as the agencies make those rules, there's a whole set of protocol for how you build those regulations. And there's two sets of public comment that you need to go through. You need to do an economic impact evaluation so you're doing a good job assessing how much it's going to cost the industry. And then at the end, you go to a board that's appointed by the governor and others that called the Governor's Regulatory Review Council, or GRC for short. And then if the review council approves your rules, then they go into effect. And of course, all this is subject to, you know, judicial review. So people can sue you and say your rules were too strict or that kind of thing. So there's a lot of checks and balances in the system as it is. And what Prop 315 does is add another layer of oversight on top of all of that, which, by the way, takes 18 months to 2 years to change a regulation. What it says is that when an agency finishes their final rulemaking and they make it all the way through this entire process with all the public input and evaluation, that they you need to get it approved by the state legislature after all of that.
Oh, boy.
And my objection to that is that the state legislature provided the authority in the first place. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of public input that's required. You do the economic impact evaluation, as I said. There's a review council at the end to make sure that you're maintaining within your statutory authority. And what I envision happening if voters approve Prop 315 is that you'll see a member of the legislature, and it would only take one, president of the Senate, speaker of the House, even some of the committee chairs, could decide, you know what, I'm not gonna bring that rule package up for a final vote. And so that would just kill the entire rule package. And there's a lot of things that you got to do in state government to stay up with regulations to make sure that you're protecting people in places like nursing homes, assisted living centers, hospitals, outpatient treatment clinics, and the like. So I just think that Prop 315 has a real potential to stifle meaningful and important reform for the regulations to keep people safe and healthy in environments like I just described. And it's just ripe for abuse, even because, as you know, anyone knows the state legislature, how it works. Like, a single legislator in the majority party can, you know, the speaker, as I mentioned, like the Speaker of the House, President of the Senate, and these committee chairs, they could just decide to stop things. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's way more red tape than is necessary. And I just hope voters and listeners out there really do their homework on all 13 of these things and really read your voters' publicity pamphlet and pay attention, because a lot of these things are really important propositions that are on the ballot.
Yeah, sounds like a big power grab from state lawmakers. That's Prop 315. Will Humble says read the information very carefully, and you're suggesting definitely a no vote on that one, Will.
Correct.
All right, we'll take a break right here. More with Will Humble. It's Buckmaster on a Wednesday, midweek edition. I was thinking ahead to our Friday Focus interview when I talk with the superintendent of schools in Arizona, superintendent of public instruction. My guest will be Tom Horn. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
On average, the Regional Transportation Authority annually contributes over $100 million to regional transportation improvements to supplement limited federal and state funds. This critical funding source provides funding for nearly two-thirds of our region's needed transportation improvements through its 2006 voter-approved half-cent sales tax. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown. Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit qlmc.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's our midweek edition. Will Humble is with us. Will just back from a fantastic trip over to Spain, where he put in a lot of miles, a lot of kilometers, doing one of the pilgrimage walks over there. Had a great time, and he is raring to go. A little bit jet lag, but he's raring to go here for segment two on the Buckmaster Show. Well, it looks like Arizona by far leads the nation as we transition out of the summer into fall. We led the nation in an area that we don't want to lead the nation in, and that is heat-related deaths. I'm just wondering, and you wrote a little bit about this, our antiquated Landlord and Tenant Act, is that part of the problem?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, it, clearly the lack of affordable housing is a major factor in the homelessness crisis. And if you look at, like, the people that are dying from, who are dying from exposure to heat are predominantly people who don't have a place to live, homeless people. And in fact, the risk factor is 500 times. That's their odds ratio, is 500 times the risk of anybody else for dying of a heat-related illness. And so the affordable housing crisis is part of it. But also in that blog post that you're talking about, I make the argument that, you know, our Arizona Landlord and Tenant Act was passed in 1972. Mm. So that's back in before I – back when I had a paper route in Scottsdale Progress. I mean, that's a long, long time ago to not have your Residential Landlord and Tenant Act updated. And when you look at the details of the landlord-tenant relationship in our state, you can, and read the law, you can see that it is very highly tilted towards landlords, and it makes it real easy for folks to get, for landlords to evict their tenants from their apartments. And many other states, I'll just take one example. Many other states have a moratorium on evictions during certain times of the year. So, for example, in Minnesota, you can't evict people in, I think it's December, January, and February because of the extreme cold. Mm-hmm. One of the things I'm arguing that we should consider in Arizona, which not just consider, we should do, is to have a summertime moratorium on evictions in the southern deserts so that you're not evicting people, you know, in July from their apartments. I'm not saying that we should, you know, tilt the act such that it's impossible to evict people. I mean, it's sadly, people don't meet their obligations sometimes, and eviction is an appropriate action at times. But to do it in the summertime, I think, is unnecessary and damaging in the sense that it just creates even more of a risk for folks when they are left, you know, thrown out of their apartments in the summertime. Another thing is that a lot of other states have required mediation between landlords and tenants before the tenant can be evicted. And the way our laws are set up, you know, a landlord can start the eviction process after the tenant's 5 days late on their mortgage, or not their mortgage, but on their rent. And they could be out. A lot of them are, most of them are out by the end of the month. Sometimes it takes as long as 6 weeks, but we have a very expedited process in our state, makes it real easy to evict tenants. And I just think that given the fact that the extreme heat we have in our southern deserts, especially Phoenix and Tucson, I think we ought to have a more humane approach to that and at least have a break in evictions during the summertime when it's so dangerous to be outside.
Yeah, kind of like the utility companies now not evicting or turning off the utilities in the middle of summer here in Arizona.
Well, they're not supposed to.
Yeah.
Let me put it that way. By and large, it has gotten a lot better in the last couple of years.
Let's go to the live line. Line two, Paul has called us on the Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Values live line. Go ahead, Paul.
This idea of people leaving during the heat, what are owners of properties supposed to do when they've got huge bills, including mortgages to pay, and you're letting people sit in their homes without paying the rent? How are you supposed to keep from having the bank foreclose on your property when you can't make the payments?
Yeah, well, I mean, you got a good point. And I mentioned on my response that, you know, I'm not making an argument that people shouldn't be evicted. I mean, if you don't meet your obligations and your contract, there should be consequences for that. And I understand that people are investing in these properties to for a reason, you know, that it's not charity work and that shouldn't be. My argument is that in July and August, and especially in the southern deserts, when you've got temperatures as high as they are, that we ought to have a brief moratorium such that people aren't being evicted in the middle of the summer. So I'm not saying they shouldn't be evicted, period. My argument is that at a minimum, let's take a look at that 1972 law and figure out, are there some things that we can do to make the process smarter for both landlords and tenants?
All right. The life expectancy in Arizona has declined, actually. New numbers, and you wrote about this in your blog, at the Arizona Public Health Association have been declining since the pandemic.
Right. And that's been actually the case in most other states, that life expectancy has been declining over the last few years. A big chunk of that, of course, was, you know, COVID-19 infections during the peak of the pandemic in 20 and 2021. Another factor is this continuing opioid epidemic, and especially with fentanyl. And if you look at the poisoning deaths, and this isn't unique to Arizona, this is around the whole country, there's just been this enormous spike in deaths from fentanyl over the last few years. And that has an outside impact on life expectancy, because a lot of those deaths are people in their 20s and 30s and 40s. And when you have an epidemic like the fentanyl crisis that's hitting younger people and middle-aged people, it does have an outsized impact on the lowering life expectancy. So, for example, if you look at COVID-19, you know, people of all ages died of COVID, but predominantly was people over 70 years old. And so, when an 80-year-old, for example, gets COVID and dies, the life expectancy decrease isn't as profound as it is in, for example, fentanyl deaths for people in their 30s and so forth, because you're really having an outside impact. Same goes with, for example, infant mortality. You know, when you have a situation with a lot of infant mortality, as we had in years past, that could really have a big impact in life expectancy when somebody, you know, who's 1 or 2 years or less than 1 year old dies, has a big impact on life expectancy. So, Arizona is at the top of the list in terms of the decrease in life expectancy. It's a combination, really, of the profound number of deaths. We were top in the country per capita of COVID deaths, but then also this continuing fentanyl crisis. Even after the Arizona Opioid Epidemic Act, which I thought was a good law back in 2018, this influx of fentanyl has really it's been a big burden in Arizona in terms of life expectancy.
All right, Will Humble, you can, and we urge our listeners, check out your blogs, and you try to put one up there every couple of days at AZPHA, which is Arizona Public Health Association. So it's azpha.org. Thanks, Will, and get some rest after your big trip. I'm glad you're back safe and sound. Thank you, sir.
All right. Take care. We'll talk to you next month.
All right. Will Humble with us on the Buckmaster Show. We're going to circle back with Keith Rosenblum. Normally, we put Keith on the first Monday of the month, but at the time when we're talking about the judicial reforms, I want to give an update.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade, using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We launch now into the second half hour of our daily radio program here on KVOI, The Voice. We are in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. We love Green Things. They are our go-to nursery here in town. They've got a 13-acre site, they being Jan and Jack, the very hands-on owners of Green Things. They're open daily in their 53rd year of business, and on that 13-acre site, you will find pretty much everything you could imagine for the garden, accessories and some beautiful items from the part of the business called Zocalo Village, including some handcrafted dining room sets that are just beautiful out of some great woods like mesquite. So check it out, Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rieto River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. We're doing a couple of telephone interviews today. Our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Once a month, usually the first Monday of the month, Keith Rosenblum, our border reporter, does his border report. But I wanted to circle back with him because our border report a couple of weeks ago, we kind of left the listeners left him hanging there about what's been going on in Mexico with the judicial reforms. And the president of Mexico has signed now into law a really complete overhaul of the judicial system in Mexico. And it will basically mean that from now on, all judges allows this reform allows judges at all levels to be elected by popular vote. That was passed on September the 10th. There was fierce opposition from legal professionals, business leaders, and international partners. Let's bring in now Keith Rosenblum. Hey, Keith, how are you?
Hello, Bill. First of all, I am fine. I am also melancholic.
Yeah, I know you were pretty much very much against this. And by the way, I didn't do the full introduction. Perhaps there's someone who's wondering, who is this guy, Keith Rosenblum? He was a border reporter, covered the border for the Arizona Daily Star and the Arizona Republic. I think I first met Keith, maybe it was when he was still reporting for the papers, but I certainly worked with him when Keith was the congressional aide to the late U.S. Representative Jim Colby. Jim represented Southern Arizona for 22 years. And finally, Keith is a former fellow at University of California, San Diego, their Center for U.S.-Mexican Studies. So that's who Keith Rosenblum is. So you were not happy with this, but we did hear from some listeners who are questioning why you are not happy with this. Isn't it a good thing for a country that is a democracy to have the people have their say about electing officials?
Well,
I know
lots of things for me in the air there. But I'll first, I believe that we met when you called the Daily Star when I was reporting and screamed at the top of your lungs, "You know not what you write about." That's my recollection.
I never did that.
There were so many other people. I thought you were among them.
No, so that was not
me. It always bodes badly for people when they're introduced by who they were. If you're for the future, if you don't mind, I'll give you some kind of cheat sheet about who I am.
Okay.
Because who I was, it's pretty much sounds like you're reading from a future obituary.
Oh, yeah. Well, why don't you one of these days just send me an email of maybe we can revamp your introduction. But anyway,
all right. Well, anyway, it has been downhill. But anyway, the answer to the question is Keith is melancholic about Mexico. I am distraught. Not so much because people don't have a right to determine their judicial system. All of us should. But the way this came about is not a good thing, and where we'll head is not a good thing. So I will explain why. First of all, Mexico right now is almost in the same position it was 40 years ago or 50 years ago when the Partido Revolucionario Institucional, was the lone party. so much the lone party that there was almost no distinction between people who were with the party and people who were in government. Not a good thing. You don't want people to be to equate one with the other. And so when the PRI became so almost an embarrassing power because there was no opposition, Mario Vargas Llosa, you'll recall or won't recall, call it the dictadura perfecta, the perfect dictatorship. And what they did was they then expanded the Congress to assure that there would be minority representatives. So they went from a 300-member Congress, you know, House of Representatives, to 500, and then came up with a whole bunch of methodologies to have proportional representation of minority parties. So that exists today, but the most recent election actually gave the Morena Party, now which very much resembles the PRI from 40 years ago, a resounding victory in the House. It gave a resounding victory to the president, Claudia Sheinbaum. It gave a resounding victory to the Senate. And what's happened now is that the President Lopez Obrador has pushed through a change now in the legal system. It is as if the executive branch and the legislative branch ganged up and said to the judicial branch, your days are numbered, nanny, nanny, boo-boo, kind of that kind of thing. That's exactly what's happening right now. So, and they did it. There's some sleight of hands here, because even though the victory of Morena was a resounding one, actually they wound up using the system to just cheat a little bit on the algorithms, and so that gave the party the two-thirds majority that it needs to for a constitutional amendment. That's what was used. There's some real serious doubts about that. But anyway, the Senate then kind of caved in as well for lots of odd reasons. There were several of the senators who were kind of coerced or cajoled, then coerced into towing the Morena party line. And in Mexico, it gets dirty. It gets to like extortion kind of things or blackmail kind of things. And this is what most of us believe occurred in the Senate, because the Senate did not have the two-thirds. Anyway, the way that the judicial appointments are going to happen now is a little bit vague, but if it is the Senate that is to be the entity that suggests the names of judges, then again, it's going to be all Morena judges. So let's forget about Morena just for 1 second and go to any party. Anytime three branches of government are in the hands of the same party, is you're just centimeters from a totalitarian state or a dictatorship. It doesn't matter how pure the people are when they come in, they won't be that way for long, because what the party says goes. And so this is why it is not a good thing. There's no check and balance right now in the country, and real sorts of awful things can occur when that happens.
Well, thank you for laying that out, because that kind of paints a really ominous picture of the judicial future of Mexico.
It should, and it should be very. And if I were, and here, you know, I've been on your show for it seems, but when radio was invented, and
yes.
and I'm an optimist, and I've been optimistic all along, and I've always said that if I had a dollar and I was could invest it in the U.S. or invest it in Mexico, pretty much since we began these, I've said I would invest it in Mexico. I see opportunity there. I see a workforce that's super capable. I see lots of things that make me optimistic. And that's not to say that, I mean, the judiciary that Mexico has had is not the model of the world. People will say it's a horrible. It was not a particularly good one to begin with, but you know, talk about what is that, whatever that goofy cliche is out of the frying pan into the oven or something like that. That's what I believe is going to happen now. I would now hold back until the Mexicans realize. By the way, in reaction to this, the peso, you probably are aware, dropped like 20%, 25% in the last month. As people, because Wall Street has a way of saying, you know what, we don't really trust you, and that is exactly what's happening. So we'll see what happens, but I would not invest right now, period, unless I had mechanisms built in where, guess what, you don't get to use the judicial system. How's that?
Yeah.
How about if we have forced binding arbitration or some other kind of go-to mechanism prior to using the courts. That might help out.
All right. And there's no way to change this, I guess, right? Set in stone.
The only way that it can be changed at all would be if the Senate, which is going to be in charge of coming up with the slates for the judges, reacts to the pressure and actually has candidates who are worthy of people's respect. But it just doesn't work that way generally. I don't have the expectations the Senate would. On the other hand, if President-elect Sheinbaum or outgoing President Lopez Obrador, how would outgoing, what, like 10 days from now?
Mm-hmm.
Would somehow be able to tweak it. It would still be ominous. It would still not be a good thing, but it would be better than where we're headed, which is, to me, a really horrible scenario, if they would build in as they come up. By the way, I would recommend to everybody, don't pay attention to what Keith says at all in this. Go online, either to YouTube or elsewhere, and put in... interview Ernesto Zedillo. Ernesto Zedillo, since he was president of Mexico, terminating, what, in 2000, 94 to 2000?
Right.
Has been at Yale. He's a brilliant man. And I heard an interview about 6 or 7 minutes long with him. And if you think I'm sounding bleak, you should listen to Ernesto Zedillo. So,
all right.
Just to buttress my point.
All right. The second... part of our half hour together after we take the break, the 10th anniversary of the 43 students killed by the cartels. That anniversary is coming up in a couple of days. I want to talk to you about what's ever happened. Has there been any kind of justice in this case? Let's talk about that when we continue with Keith Rosenblum right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. 2006. County voters approved the Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year Regional Transportation Plan, half-cent sales tax. They're both effective through June 30th, 2026. The region to receive continued funding for another 20 years. RTA is developing a new plan and tax extension for voter consideration. Public input will be key. Receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development. Visit rtanext.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com, We are watching Tucson.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Perfect time of year as we, let's see, the first day of fall is this weekend. So, this, great weekend to get away to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. It's only about a three-hour drive, depending on where you are leaving from in the Tucson area. Check it out. Great hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Just a perfect time of year in the land of enchantment. Their website is southwestnewmexico.org. I know you will not be disappointed. We send a lot of listeners over there. People who said, I had no idea there was such a place. And a good place, not only for the weekends, but even a midweek getaway. All right, Keith Rosenblum is with us on the live line. As I mentioned before we took the break, Keith, September 26th will mark the 10th anniversary of a really tragic event that shook up the entire country of Mexico. 43 students were killed by the drug cartels. Whatever happened, what was the follow-up to this, Keith?
Just one murky investigation after another. Parents going to see the president, the parents themselves becoming divided among themselves as to whether they were being given the truth. Mexico has no ability to investigate herself. And I say that as, someone who's followed we have commissions or committees that determine things. Mexico doesn't have it. I wish that wasn't the case. We had the Warren Commission after the riots in the 60s. The Warren Commission. That's right. Commission. It was race riots.
The Warren Commission was for the Kennedy assassination, wasn't it?
That's correct. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. So we had the Warren Commission. Then we had the O-ring NASA investigation. We believe that our government, and we may not have this for very long, by the way. I'm saying this as somebody who's idealistic and who has seen very appropriate and just marvelous productions from public servants in the United States, where we come up with findings and everybody believes them, and we can move on to those truths. That South Africa showed us that with a truth commission, you can do it. Some African nations have done it themselves. Mexico in 2024 is still incapable of investigations that tell its people the truth. And there's a number of variables. If you ask me, I can go, one by one. But just to the conclusion I've reached is they can't. In the case of Ayotzinapa, which is what you're referring to, the 43 students from the rural school and what occurred there, Mexicans don't know. They don't know the truth there. They actually don't even know the truth behind the ABC, the ABC fire in Hermosillo from how long ago. So these things, they go on forever. You grieve for the country and the lack of ability to conclude and resolve and to take those teachings and them. And I grieve for the people who are the victims in kind of that same system. And so you could argue, well, Mexico's come a long way. Well, it still has a long way to go in those areas. And so, my optimism of where the country is headed and lots of great things to come is it sounds contradictory with this also really negative view of what's happening to the judiciary and the country's inability to form truth commissions. But the reality is that there are vested interests in the Mexicans not knowing truths. They don't know they don't even know the truth about the 1964 Olympics and the shooting of the students there. They've had one committee after another looking at this or that. And when they do produce things, they're not credible. Generally, they don't produce anything worthy of an investigation. I think this is where, if Mexico was a little more honest with itself, they would have brought in experts from here. They would have brought in experts from the United Nations. The Colosio shooting in 94, sorry, in Tijuana, never really resolved to anybody's satisfaction. So that's the, you ask me about the 10-year anniversary, and I say you and I, if you are on the air in 2034, I'm pretty sure we'll be discussing the 20th anniversary and the inability of Mexico to provide any solution or anything palatable to its population then too.
What is the feeling about what did happen? Could you kind of summarize that for our listeners?
Sure. This is nighttime in the state of Guerrero, and these are students who they call it hijacked, but they didn't really, they purloined, better said, they got buses from that area to go to Mexico City to demonstrations. And as it turns out, this is all based on a bunch of different reading that I've done. They go ahead and they head off, and the bus lines from whom they purloin, or they don't hijack it, but they take the buses, are also buses that are used internationally, and they have destinations of Chicago, a story that would make you happy. Not happy. Anyway, so those buses are international buses, and those buses also, as the stories have been told, were also set up with hidden compartments for drug smuggling.
Oh.
And so what happens is that there's the army and the police and the cartels, there's all kind of a cahoots in the Ayotzinapa area. And the students are, this is at least the best that most people can do. And there have been fabulous NPR, New York Times investigations on it. What happens is that there's an assumption by the cartel that their buses and the contents of the hidden compartments are being taken by either a rival gang or somebody there's a confusion. And so what initially is supposed to be like stop the bus and do things becomes not only a detaining of the 43 students in a bus, but also the detaining and then depending again, and Mexico did bring in, they had a committee that was made up of experts from Latin America. I don't know if there were any Americans on it. I don't think so. But there was some guy from Chile, some others. And that committee, which when it finished its work was ordered out of Mexico very quickly, by the way, said that the military and that the judicial police were complicit. So you want, and the students, they found some DNA of students who were either calcified, burned, or buried. It's one of those things that has become, so it's like was there a second shooter, on the hill in Dallas. It's one of those things that now has become a legend, and nobody believes anybody's version. And so President López Obrador, who had said that when he came into office, this would all be solved on, in year two or year three or whatever, has failed there. There's a number of López Obrador failings. There's a number of successes, but this is one of the major failures, is that the parents themselves are still woefully divided. No single version has credibility. The international investigations were kind of wound up being a travesty or a mishmash of things, and there's no credible singular version.
All right, Keith Rosenblum, thank you very much, Keith. Always a pleasure.
Mine, Bill. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. That'll do it. On behalf of Keith and Tom on the other side of the glass, Bill wishing everybody well.